Good evening, everyone, and welcome to tonight's Bible class. And also give a warm welcome to those that might be attending via the video link or listening in on the telephone. And Brother Ted tonight is going to address us to the theme, Abraham, a City Without Foundation. And he's asked that we read as an introduction from Acts chapter 7, and we're going to be reading verses 1 to 8. So that then leads as an introduction. Thank you, Ted.
Well, thanks, Joe, and good evening, everyone. And a special mention for those who might be listening or watching online. There's pretty high expectations this evening. Darcy, when I walked in, said, I've got pretty high expectations of you tonight, Pa. So the pressure's on. But hopefully we can deliver for you, Darcy. So
okay, so we're going to look at tonight Abraham's life in the context of what's up on the screen. And it says that he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. So that was Abraham. And what we're going to discover tonight is that the moment when Abraham said yes to God's calling, because he called him to come out of his country where he was born, and he left his city and country of his birth, from that moment on, his eyes were fixed on something else, something different to Ur of the Chaldees. And he became a sojourner. So what's a sojourner? It's a word that we don't use a lot. So any of you young ones here have a guess at what sojourner means? A stranger. A stranger? Yep, great. Any others? Or anyone else in the audience? Yeah, someone who constantly is on the move. I've got a few others here. You could be an itinerant, an exile, a refugee. So compared to what he had before, he left that all behind. And from his call at 75 to when he died at 175, he lived 100 years exactly like that. And for the rest of his life, he didn't have a place that had foundations. It was tents. And as we know, Abraham was a man of remarkable faith. But we're going to discover tonight that he had his ups and downs in life, just like we do. So Abraham lived in the Middle East. Perhaps, Sebastian, if I can have the next slide, sorry. And just this slide here to emphasise what we were talking about before. And by faith he sojourned in a land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob. And if you can put up the next one now as well. So Abraham lived in this area here. You can see it there. Ur of the Chaldees. And this was possibly the top civilization of the world at that time. So how many years ago are we talking about? Anyone know? It's a long time. No? How many? It's 4,000. Did you say 4,000? It's 4,000 years ago. So this, we're at AD 2000 and something, and this was around 2000 BC. So it's 4,000 years. But he lived in a remarkable civilization. And this is called the cradle of civilization, this area, because it's a bit like the River Nile in Egypt. You have these two magnificent rivers that flow down from Turkey and where the snows are up a bit further, the Euphrates and the Tigris. So it's well watered. So it was easy to live there. There was always plenty of water. And we had the privilege, last time we travelled back, we came back on Qatar from Milan, and they flew down this valley in the night. I reckon it was about 1 or 2 o'clock, and I find it hard to sleep at the best of time in planes. We did actually have a where we could lay down, but it was so beautiful to watch this area. It was just filled with light. Trees, you could see all the oil refineries and places. So it was, as we said, probably the peak of modern civilization. And next slide, if I can, Sebastian. So this is Ur of the Chaldees. And this is the remnants of the city that existed there. You can see the ziggurat in the background. Next slide, Sebastian. So there's the ruins of the buildings. This is 4,000 years ago. You could see they were well constructed. And they dug this up about 100 years ago. Yeah, next one. And there's their worship. Some of you may have seen that before. It's the ziggurat of Ur. And this was a very complex civilization. And I'm just going to fill you in a little bit on how modern this civilization was and what Abraham gave up when he left there. It was probably the most cosmopolitan city in the world at that time. The civilization that was going on at that time was in Egypt. And at the same time, the Giza, the pyramids and the Sphinx were already built. So that's pretty incredible, isn't it? They were about 500 years before this. I'm a bit of a history freak, so it mightn't mean much to you guys, but I'm fascinated by it. So I'm going to read this out. It says, Ur in southern Mesopotamia was founded by the Sumerian people, but the earliest Semitic texts in Mesopotamia are also from Ur. And the reason we're talking about this is that Abraham was of the Semitic race. And the Sumerians called early Semitic migrants Westerners. So there's nothing new under the sun, is there? So Abraham was evidently part of the huge Semitic minority that lived in the large Sumerian city-state of Ur. Ur had hot and cold running water. This is 4,000 years ago. A sewer system, multi-story buildings, paved roads, major temples, ornate furniture, and a variety of metal instruments. The Sumerians developed a system that divided the hour into 60 minutes. So this is where we get that from, 4,000 years ago. The minute into 60 seconds, and the circle into 360 degrees. A system that we still use today, 4,000 years later. And there were well-developed law codes and a standard system of weights and measures. And there was a system of canals connecting the Tigris and the Euphrates river valleys to control floods and provide irrigation so farming could go on year-round. So there was no problems with water. They could grow food. They could grow many crops a year. It was incredibly productive, this area that we saw on the map. And at the time of Abraham, Ur would have been, or very near, the shore of the Persian Gulf. And you can see, the map's gone, but it now is quite a long way from the sea. In fact, it's now about, it's there again, is it? So you can see it's quite a way from the sea. But in those days, they think it was right on the sea. Because of the silt and that flows down the rivers, it's now about 150 miles from the coast. So that's quite amazing when you think of that, isn't it? And it was probably a port on the Gulf shore that was alive with trading and fishing boats as well. And this commentator observes, if Abraham was a wealthy man in Ur, which appears that he might have been, He must have possessed many treasures of the finest craftsmanship and most exquisite materials. And he would have lived in a mansion in Ur that probably would be impressive today. And as an upper-class free man, he would have obtained a level of education and must have been literate and fluent in Sumerian and various other Semitic languages, e.g. Aramaic, Amorite, and probably Egyptian. So we can see here that there's a man well equipped for the mission that God is about to send him on. Similar to Paul, when you think of Paul, when he went out to teach in the Roman world the gospel, he was qualified as a Roman citizen and could speak many languages. So God calls people for a particular purpose with particular skills. So if we can have the next slide. So Abraham was called by God. And if you come back to Genesis chapter 11, in verse 31, and we read that, I'll wait for you to get there. Terah took Abram, his son, as he was then known, and Lot, the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth together from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. So you can see where Haran is, right up the top. So this is a pretty complex thing that God asked Abram, as he was known at that time, to do. He said, go from your country and go to Canaan. Anyone got any idea how far it was from Ur over to Canaan? Any guesses? A bit more than that. Yeah, a bit more than that. It was actually nearly 1,800 kilometre journey. So how do you think they would have got there 4,000 years ago? Anyone have any ideas? Didn't have any cars, did they? Motorbikes? Well, they might have been able to use some canals or that up to Haran, but basically it was either on foot or maybe a camel. I don't know whether there was any horses in the civilization then, but certainly I think camels were extant. So you imagine you're living in this luxurious place and God says to you and your family, get out of here. I'll go to a country that I'll show you, to Canaan. So you uproot everything and change it for a life on the road. And Vanessa and I love going on the road in the caravan. We don't have the dust and have to set up the tents. When we get there, the caravan's all set up with solar power and water and everything else. So it's not like camping. So this is what Abram was called to do, to get out of his country and to go. So the only problem that there was when God made this call to Abram, Sarah couldn't have any children. It says in one of the verses there, verse 30 of chapter 11, Sarah was barren. She had no child. So if the promise come through him, there was no chance of a child because she was barren. And so it was a pretty big call, wasn't it, for them to go out. I'll just get the right page of my notes here. So So it was a big call for them to go out, and also, as we said, it was a long, long way to go to Canaan. So this wasn't an easy thing to do. So they went to Haran. If you come to the next chapter, chapter 12, it's one that we're very, very familiar with. It says, "The Lord said to Abram, 'Go from your country and your kindred and your father's land, your father's house, to a land that I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and him that dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth would be blessed.'" So this is God's promise. And it's remarkable because his name's going to be great. So can we now, in 2022, say that Abraham's name is great? Is it well known in the world? If it is, why? How many faiths stem from Abraham? Three, isn't there? So there's the Jews, the Arabs, and of course Christianity is based on Abraham as being the father of the faithful. So these promises were quite incredible. But what happened was that they got to Haran, and what happened in Haran? They were going to Canaan, but what happened in Haran? What does the record say? They settled down. So he'd been called to go out. And it says there, you picked that up. It says that it was in the previous chapter, wasn't it, the last verse, that they settled down there. So, in fact, Abraham was negating this call because he was instructed to go there in verse 1 of chapter 12, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you." So, in fact, he didn't do any of those, did he? Except go from Ur, where he originally lived. So what we want to talk about a bit tonight, in terms of his journey and journey in the long run, is this call that we have. And I'll put it this way, if we look back and we say, "All right, it's all right for you, Abraham, you were called by God." It'd be easy if we were called by God and he gave us a message, wouldn't we? We'd think, that was pretty good. But the fact is that Abraham still had to live life. And he still had to do the hard yards, going from this magnificent civilization that he was come from, and he had to get on the road and live in tents and go to a country that I'll show you, with all the troubles that ensued in his life. So his life is one that we see of trusting God, and in this instance he trusted God and left Ur of the Chaldees and went to Haran. But there was doubt as well, wasn't there? Because they settled in Haran. So he hadn't left his family. So we see in verse 4 to 8 that after God had called him to go, he did the right thing and trusted God. So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. It'd be interesting to know, wouldn't it, how old he was when he left Ur. We're not told. And how long they actually lived in Haran. There's no evidence that I know of that would tell us that. So they settled there, but we don't know the period of time. So God intervenes now, and his father dies, And he comes to him and says, get going. So in verse 4, so Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people that they had acquired in Haran, and they set out to go to the land of Canaan. And when they came to the land of Canaan, Abram passed through the land to the place at Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. And at that time, the Canaanites were in the land. So you can see this journey of faith now, and he comes down. You can see where Shechem is. It's pretty near Jerusalem, I imagine. Does anyone know Shechem, whether that's above or below Jerusalem?
North.
It's just north of Jerusalem. So he arrives in the land. And his faith was pretty strong at this time because he wasn't worried about the Canaanites that were dwelling in the land, we're told here. So he had plenty of faith to do that. And it says then, in verse 7, then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I will give this land. So there was the original promise. He went out. He came to the land here at Shechem. And because of that obedience, God said to him, I'm going to give this land to your offspring. So here's the first recorded thing where he worshipped God. So it says, so he built there an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. So this is the first sort of encounter in the land. So he travelled all that way, and it seems as though there was no other appearance by God. I'll send you to a land, and when you get there, well, it'll be okay. But God appeared to him there. So his faith was pretty strong at this time. But we read on, and it says, and Abram journeyed on, still going towards the Negev. So he's coming down, and the Negev is down below Hebron in the southern area of Israel. It's quite a major desert. And in these days, that's where Israel has its nuclear reactors and the nuclear bombs that they have. About 100, I believe. So we read on, and it says, now there was a famine in the land. And it says that Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. So how do you think Abram was getting on at this stage? He'd come from Ur of the Chaldees, and even up to Haran, all the way up to Haran, there was plenty of water. No troubles with water. There would have been no troubles getting any food. So he comes to the land, and it's somewhat different to living where he lived, because the only water they got came out of the sky. And of course there was a Sea of Galilee, and no doubt there were small rivers. So no water. And to add to it, there was a severe famine in the land, and he's just there dwelling in his tents and wondering what to do next. So we can see the doubt creeping in once again, because he went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. And when he was about to enter Egypt, he said to Sarai, his wife, I know that you are a woman beautiful in appearance, and when the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but they will let you live. So you say, you are my sister, that it may go well with me because of you, and that my life may be spared for your sake. So we're going through what we would think is a bit of doubt again in Abraham's mind. So he tells an untruth, a lie, whichever way you like it. It was a half-truth because they were related. That's true. But he forgot about the promises, really, didn't he? Because he was worried about getting killed. But God had told him that the promise is going to come through you, Abraham. So he went through this period of deceit. He deceived Pharaoh. But as always, because God was going to bless him and look after him, God looked after him, didn't he? And after Pharaoh had taken her as wife into his house, but the Lord, in verse 17, afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abraham's wife. So Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister, so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife, take her and go." He was pretty upset, wasn't he? And Pharaoh gave men orders concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. So God was intervened to save him from this dilemma. And they had settled down there, hadn't they? Once again, like in Haran, they'd gone to Egypt, and it was very comfortable. And because of Sarai, Pharaoh made Abraham a very, very rich man. So things were going really well for him, weren't they? But you can see that there was this period of doubt in his life, and they were cast out of Egypt. So you can see now that they return from Egypt and come back up to Hebron, which is on the just on that southern side of the Dead Sea. And we can see in chapter 13 that God, in verse 4, well, we read from verse 2. Now Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver and gold, and he journeyed on from the Negev as far as Bethel to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai. So he thought, look, I'll return to where I first went when I came from Haran down here. And there we read in verse 4, to the place where he had made an altar at the first, and there Abram called on the name of the Lord. So here he is calling on the name of the Lord. And we then read about the strife that happened between Lot and Abraham because of the great riches of flocks and herds that they'd gathered, and they had to separate. Perhaps if we can have the next slide there. Move on from that one and that one. So here they are. This is sort of gives you an idea in this slide about the places that Abram moved around to in that in the land. So you can see the various spots which we'll refer to this evening about how he moved his flocks and everything around. And so here we have, thanks Sebastian, so this is the incident we're talking about. So they separated, and Abraham gave Lot the choice of where he wanted to go, and we know the story well, that he decided to go down to Sodom, because this is before the cataclysm that happened when Lot's wife turned into the pillar of salt, that this was well watered, it was beautiful, it was green. It looked like Egypt in its prosperity, and no doubt very much like where they came from in Ur of the Chaldees. But Abram decided to stay in Hebron and continue his life as a sojourner and living in his tents. Next one, if you can. I just wanted to show you this. We're breaking off into a little bit of archaeology for just a moment. This is a site that we've talked about how he went in the Negev, and he stayed a while at Beersheba, which was a place where Isaac spent a lot of time too. And the archaeologists have dug up these remains. It doesn't relate to Abraham's time, but these ruins are of a settlement that was at Beersheba in the time of David and Saul. Next slide, thanks. And you can see here, because it was on the edge of the desert, and Israel being the land of droughts and only getting rain from heaven, they had these wonderful water storages. And this is from 3,000 years ago. Next one, thank you. And this is they designed a water system from a hill that brought down the water, and they stored it underneath the town, because if there was a siege, they would be able to have the water. So is there another one, or is that it? Okay. So it's interesting in the sense that they haven't linked anything to Abram's time when he was there, but you could see that it was a place that was being occupied, but not in many numbers because it was so dry. So next slide. Okay, so this one is just about the timeline, and we're up to where. So 75 years, he went from Haran, and we're coming along, goes to Pharaoh here, and then Abram defeats the king of Sodom, who takes Lot captive. That's about where we're up to. But perhaps you can flick over to the next one. Okay, so this is the journey of faith that we're talking about with Abram, and how his faith oscillated depending on the events that were happening, right up to the time that he obeyed God and took his son to be sacrificed on Mount Moriah. So that's a period of 40 years that he had to live. It wasn't just all roses for Abram. He had to live his life out in pretty hard circumstances. So that's what we find here, that they'd been expelled from Egypt. They'd come now up to Hebron, and God had promised here in this chapter, if you come down to verse 14 to 18, in chapter 13, the Lord said to Abram after Lot had separated from him, "Lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and westward, eastward and westward, for all the land that you see I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring as the dust of the earth, so that if one can count the dust of the earth, your offspring also can be counted. So arise, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I give it to you." So Abram moved his tent and came and settled by the oaks of Mamre, which are at Hebron, and there he built an altar to the Lord. So it seems to be that God was well pleased when he separated from Lot, and whether that's in connection of leaving all his family now. So that was the last link, wasn't it? That he was still with Lot. So God was pleased with that, and he continued on the promise, adding a little bit more each time. So he was encouraged to walk through the length and the breadth of that land, as we saw on that slide before, that he went from the north of the land to the south of the land. But once again, the doubt creeps in. In chapter 15, we're going to skip over what happened with Lot, and we read in verse 1, "After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Fear not, Abram, I am your shield, your reward will be very great." And that was God talking to him after he'd come back from rescuing Lot, and remembered also that he didn't accept any booty or plunder from when he defeated all those kings. He said, nope, I'm not taking anything, because you'll say that you enrich me to the kings of Sodom. So God was praising him, but Abraham seems to be going through this moment of doubt again, and he says in verse 2, O Lord God, what will you give me, for I continue childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. So he was just a servant, he had no child. So what's going to happen to all this wealth that I've built up? And where's the child that you promised? It hasn't come. So we've gone on, he was 75, and we've gone on about another 11 years now. And we read in verse 4, and behold, the word of the Lord came to him, this man will not be your heir, your very own son shall be your heir. And now we have we can see that he was able to trust God again, because the word of the Lord came to him and he brought him outside and said, look toward heaven and number the stars, if you are able to number them. Then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. And he believed the Lord, and he counted it to him as righteousness. So here's one of the shining moments of his life, because God took him out and said, there's the stars. Your descendants are going to be like this many, if you can count them. And he believed. Have we had that sort of belief? I wonder. It was incredible, wasn't it, that he was able to do that. And it was counted to him as righteousness. And that's why he's the father of the faithful, isn't it? That he had that instantaneous recognition of God. And when God blessed him, he had that incredible measure of faith. And that's what got him through the ups and the downs. So that the doubt is dispelled by trust again. And he moves on with his life. And we read in Genesis 15 that God accepted Abraham because he believed his promises. He trusted God, and God confirmed the promises unconditionally. It didn't matter what happened in Abraham's life or Abram's life. God confirmed those promises. He was with him all the time. But if we go over to chapter 16, we find that there's a little bit of doubt creeps in again. So now Sarai, in verse 1, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name is Hagar. And Sarai said to Abraham, behold now, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her. And Abram listened to the voice of Sarah. So this is what happened. He went into Hagar in verse 4, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. So here's this moment of doubt. And at this time, he gave Sarah her way. But he knew that the child was going to come through him and Sarah. And it's all right for us looking from this moment of time. But he received the first promise at 75. He's now 86 years old. His wife is 76. And they were giving up on having a child. And so there was this little bit of doubt that crept in. So they took matters into their own hands. But come over to chapter 17, and we find that the trust returns. It's another Is it another 11, 12 years later, when Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abram and said to him, "I am God Almighty. Walk before me and be blameless, that I may make my covenant between me and you and may multiply you greatly." Then Abram fell on his face, and God said to him, "Behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be the father of a multitude of nations. No longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be Abraham. For I have made you the father of a multitude of nations." So there was a multitude of nations that sprung from him. Ishmael, which was the Arab line, and then eventually when Isaac was born a year later, there was a multitude of nations from Israel and then on to the promises, which link everyone, all nations, into that promise. And he says in verse 7, "I will establish my covenant between me and you and your offspring after you throughout their generations for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and your offspring after you, and I'll give you and your offspring after you the land of your sojournings." So his faith now was once again at a pinnacle. And we know the story in that here happens now, that a year later, Sarai is blessed with a child, and it was a cause of great delight, wasn't it? And Abraham worshipped God, but he laughed when he was told of this event. However, Sarai laughed, and because she was in disbelief. And I said, it's easy for us looking at it from this end, but he was now 100 and his wife was 90. And if you can look at the Guinness Book of Records, how old is the oldest woman that's ever had a child? Anyone know? Anyone's a Guinness? 60? Yeah, well, I think it's about 63 or something now, isn't it? Sorry? Not naturally, no. So here you're looking at something that is beyond the realms of human belief, isn't it? And yet Abraham maintained that trust in God. And in this case, Sarah doubted and needed to hear from the messengers, "Is anything too hard for the Lord?" So then we have once again a moment of here where Ishmael, where God, after Ishmael was born, that Abraham asked God that Ishmael would be blessed too, and God agreed with that, but he reiterated that the child of promise was not through Hagar, but it was through Sarai. So we have this sort of wavering all the time. And so there was the joy of the birth, and a child was born in Isaac. And there's only one more moment of doubt that I've got here now that happened. If you come over to chapter 20... we find that in verse 1, Abraham journeyed towards the territory of the Negev and lived there between Kadesh and Shur, and he sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said to Sarah, his wife, "She is my sister." And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. So what had happened 20 years before in Egypt, here we find Abraham now doing the same thing. And as we said, it was a half-truth, but his faith just seemed to waver for a while. And it happened that fortunately that God rescued him again. So it's incredible that even though his faith wavered a little bit, God was there to save him once again, and he appeared to Abimelech in a dream, and he released Sarai. But he wasn't happy with him, was he? That he had done this, he had deceived him, and that didn't go well for relations between Abimelech and Abraham. So the trusting side was brought further up the scale when Isaac was born, because all of a sudden he had a child, and this was the child of the promise. And that happened right at the moment that God said that it would happen. So, and the final moment of great trust from Abram, and the absolute pinnacle of his faith, was that he was prepared to sacrifice his son on Mount Moriah. And he was happy to go through with that, even though he'd waited all these years. And it would be, he was now about 105, it was 100, he was about 115. He'd waited 40 years since they left Ur for the child to be born. But he was happy, and he trusted God. His faith had grown in leaps and bounds, and he was trusting God, and he took him up and was prepared to offer him. So this is why Abraham's called that person of faith. So, perhaps if we can have the next slide, we're getting close to the end now. It's coming. Yeah, so, and Abraham's whole thing in life was that he was a stranger and a sojourner. So we've reached, after the wonderful event of the birth of this child and also him offering Isaac, his wife died. So if you come over to chapter 23, it says in verse 1 that Sarah lived 127 years. And these were the years of the life of Sarah. And Sarah died in Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abram went in to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. And Abraham rose up from before his dead and said to the Hittites, I am a sojourner and a foreigner among you. Give me property among you for a burying place, that I may bury my dead out of sight. So here you have the same consistent message. So this is now another 32 years on from Mount Moriah. He's still singing the same song, that I'm a stranger and a sojourner. So from the very moment that he received that call to go out and obey God's word, his whole focus was on that point of being someone different, who didn't fit in, that dwelt in tents. And as such, he's a great example for us, isn't it? Because we've obeyed the call, and there's many young people here who've said yes to God and have been baptised recently, which is absolutely wonderful. And they're starting on that journey, as the older ones of us have as well, that we are strangers and sojourners in this life. Doesn't mean we don't participate in life, but we're like Abraham. We try to live a life that doesn't conform to the values of this land. And what's amazing is that Abraham waited all that time for a son. And do you know how old he was before he had any grandchildren? Anyone work it out? He was 160. So from a man who at 75 was promised a land, a seed, a country, all those sorts of things, he waited till he was 100 to get a son. And his grandchildren were born somewhat later. So it doesn't look like a lot of descendants, does it, in the original promise that he was given. But we knew what it grew into all years later when they went down into Egypt. And I just want to we'll conclude in Hebrews 11. He lived that consistent life against all the odds. It wasn't easy, was it? Hebrews 11. And it's the faith chapter, of course, and it talks about the faith of Abraham. And it says that by faith Abram, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, "Through Isaac shall your offspring be named." He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. So that was the resurrection, wasn't it? He knew that God could raise him. And by faith, Jacob, when dying, blessed each of his sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. So it goes through with all those wonderful stories about of these men of faith. And if you go back to verse 13, these are the concluding verses. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised. That's the people that were mentioned beforehand. But having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For who people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland? And if they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. And we pray that that might be us as well.